It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. T-minus 5 months away from the first of the nation test of presidential candidates. Of course, the Iowa caucuses coming up in the 1st of February, as far as we know now. 14 months away from the general election. It's Politics Wednesday. We hope you'll join our discussion this hour. Joining us to give us their view on things as it stands now, Kathy Obradovich is with us. Des Moines Register columnist in our Des Moines studio. Nice to have you on again, Kathy.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Josh Rogers joining us from New Hampshire, senior political reporter for New Hampshire Public Radio. Josh, are you there?
I am. Good to be here.
Good to have you with us. And obviously, with the two of you here, we want to compare how our candidates are doing in the two leadoff states. We want to take a good look, first of all, at the latest poll, the latest Iowa poll, Des Moines Register Bloomberg Politics Iowa poll, finding that Donald Trump, his support continuing, 23% support in Iowa. Ben Carson in second with 18%, just 5 percentage points from the front runner. I'd like to have you do a little bit of analysis on that, Kathy, and then switch over to Josh in the Republican column, if we can stay there, first of all. Then we'll go over to the Democrats to see what the latest polls are reviewing and revealing there. Kathy, what do you see in these poll numbers from this past weekend? It's a poll taken last week, August 23rd to the 26th, by Seltzer and Company. This has been one of the most accurate polls going back, 400 likely Republican caucus goers.
Yes, Ann Seltzer, our pollster, is known as the gold standard in polling, and she has been very, very consistent. This is an interesting poll in the sense that both of the front runners, Donald Trump and Ben Carson, have never been elected to anything before. There has never been a winner of the Iowa caucuses who has never held office. So is this going to be the year of the outsider? You know, outsiders do well in Iowa, despite the fact that they never win the caucuses. You look at past years where, for example, Steve Forbes, a publisher and businessman, Pat Robertson, evangelical pastor, Pat Buchanan, conservative commentator, you know, those kinds of candidates come to Iowa and have been able to make a name for themselves. Well, Donald Trump already has a big name, but he has never been a candidate before. So this is something new for him. And Ben Carson is somebody who is getting to be much better known in Iowa. I think you look at earlier polls where people liked what they saw in him, but very few people knew who he was. His name recognition is increasing, and along with that, his popularity.
Mm-hmm. Switch over to New Hampshire. What, Josh, do you see in the latest polls to compare that with in New Hampshire?
Well, Donald Trump has been in the lead in polls here in nine straight polls, and since mid-June when he took over from Jeb Bush. New Hampshire isn't an easy place to be a front runner, and that was the role that Jeb Bush played from the moment he got into this race. A lot of people in New Hampshire, I would put myself in this category, didn't expect Trump's moment to last as long as it seems to last, and I agree that it will be interesting to see if this is a year of the political outsider. You know, you go to a Trump event, and it's a mixed bag in talking to voters what they see in him. And, you know, maybe this is something genuinely durable. You know, as the calendar gets into the fall, it'll be interesting to see. But, you know, the issues that voters are concerned about are, you know, economic security, national security, immigration. And those are all things in which they've been giving Donald Trump high marks. And there has been less of a concern about ideological inconsistencies and positions he's taken in the past that would be really, really almost kind of heretical within a Republican primary. So it's been interesting to watch.
Positions, talking about positions and issues, Kathy, you wrote a column that reveals that, surprisingly, a good deal of the especially Republican caucus goers or past Republican caucus goers are not that interested in policy positions.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Donald Trump said at the state fair that, yeah, he's going to be putting out a policy position on immigration, but he's doing it mostly for the media. He doesn't think his supporters care that much about it and that they trust him to do the job when he gets in office. Well, our Iowa poll found out that that is, in fact, the case, that a majority of likely Republican caucus goers say that whoever their chosen candidate is, that they trust him or her to figure out the issues in office, and they don't necessarily need detailed policy positions from their candidates. So that was kind of a surprise to me.
Do you think that's a shift, Kathy, from what you've observed in past years? I don't know if this question has been polled in past years, but it is surprising.
It's surprising in the sense that Iowa voters and New Hampshire voters, for that matter, are known for asking candidates pointed questions about policy and insisting on answers from candidates. That reputation has gone on a long time. Now, that is not to say that we already know that voters take personality into account oftentimes more so than specific policy issues. So it doesn't surprise me to hear that voters are putting perhaps their trust in a personality over specific policy positions. What I think surprises me and dismays me a little bit is that they're willing to admit it. You know, I think that one of the only things that voters have to hold their candidates and their elected officials accountable is what they say they are going to do on the campaign trail. And if you're not going to insist on details of what they say they're going to do, how are you going to hold them accountable later if they don't do what you think that they were elected to do?
Was that broken down in response to the trust versus specific policy into different demographics, young, old, male, female, more tending to trust, less
yes.
tending to trust?
Yeah, it was. And interestingly to me, first-time caucus goers were less trusting. They wanted more details. And younger voters were less trusting and wanted more details from their candidates than veteran caucus goers and the oldest caucus goers. So, you know, the newbies, I think, probably have it right in the sense that, you know, they want to know what they're getting from these candidates.
What do you think when you hear that specific question asked, Josh, and the response that we get from Republican caucus goers?
Well, it's interesting because having attended some Trump events here and I've talked to voters and you know, I was one who expected Trump's, you know, I think you can fairly call it bombast, might not go over well with the seasoned New Hampshire voter. And a lot of people I talked to, I said, well, do you believe anybody who talks about themselves in such glowing terms is necessarily going to be able to get the job done to the extent that Mr. Trump says he can? And oftentimes I've been told, well, I hope so. Then ultimately, oh, well, maybe not. But can we do any worse than the others? And so I do think this is a moment when voters are, you know, deeply frustrated in both parties. And Trump has obviously done a remarkable job of harnessing that and riding that for the moment, at the very least.
Mm-hmm. We want to reach out to our listeners this hour on this Politics Wednesday. Josh Rogers with us of New Hampshire Public Radio, Kathy Obradovich of the Des Moines Register, and we would like to have you join our conversation. For instance, do you need clear positions on specific policies from your candidate? If you're a caucus goer, you plan to go out, think about this. Or would you rather just trust him or her to figure out that policy on the job, as Donald Trump seems to indicate, and as the latest Iowa poll seems to indicate that many Republican caucus goers trust a person, want to trust a person. Do you need specifics, or do you want to trust? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Well, we've talked about Donald Trump there. Let's talk about, I think they've called him the submarine because he's so quiet and has made so much headway here. Ben Carson, Kathy, in this latest poll, surprisingly cruising into second place, 18%, just 5 percentage points from the front runner, Donald Trump. Well, comment. I'd like to ask you both to comment on Ben Carson's appeal in just a moment. But here's an excerpt from Ben Carson's speech at the Iowa GOP's Lincoln Dinner way back in May.
You know, Lincoln was an exhibit in courage. And he was an individual who assumed the presidency after only 2 years of political experience. I bring that up because there are some people who seem to think that many years of political experience are necessary in order to be able to think and to have courage. And I'm not sure that that's true. I think it can be helpful. But there's so many different ways for people to gain experience. And living in the real world is one of them. And it makes a huge difference when you know how to do things, how to make things work, and you understand the lives of everyday Americans.
GOP presidential candidate Ben Carson in a speech at the Iowa GOP Lincoln Dinner back in May. Now, almost all the Republicans have been upstaged by this, let's use that word, Josh, bombast of Donald Trump. However, this is one. Ben Carson, retired neurosurgeon, low-key personality, has gained some ground that few have seemed to notice. What's behind this quiet rise, according to your barometer, Kathy?
Well, I think that Ben Carson is becoming better known in Iowa, and he has been well-liked by those who knew him from the very beginning, but very few people knew him. So his name ID is rising, and with that, people are liking his really interesting personal story. He rose from a very poor family to become one of the most famous and celebrated neurosurgeons in the country. He is... I think we talk about him being mild-mannered, but he has also been very positive. He's not one to go out and attack other candidates. I think that that is helping him, for example, appeal more to women than Donald Trump is, for example. And I think that also people are looking at him as a conservative candidate and an outsider, just like he was talking about, and somebody who is very different from what they normally see on the campaign trail.
Josh Rogers, anything to add to that? Anything different from out east in New Hampshire?
Well, Dr. Carson hasn't been here a huge amount, but he is very, very low-key on the campaign trail. I went on a tour of some diners with him, and you know, he's an easygoing manner. It is not at all, you know, grabbing people by the lapels, frantically pumping their hand and saying, vote for me. He's very relaxed, and he has a core of support that are familiar with his biography, that have seen his appearances on Fox News. And a lot of some people who, you know, recall him taking on the president on health care, he appeals to the base of the party. And he does have a quieter style. You know, right now we have so many candidates that, you know, sort of everybody's still in the mix. I mean, he's in the middle of the pack here in New Hampshire, and, you know, perhaps on paper isn't the greatest fit for a state that is where the GOP independents can vote in the primary. It's not dominated by cultural conservatives. But, you know, he's doing fine here. It's not going to be a place where he's expected to do fantastically, though.
Mm-hmm. Josh Rogers with us of New Hampshire Public Radio. Kathy Obradovich of the Des Moines Register. It's Politics Wednesday on River to River. If you've just joined us, 5 months away from the first of the nation test of the presidential candidates. Soon after that, it's New Hampshire with their primary. 14 months away from the general election in the Republican race. The latest polls showing the non-politicians, as we've been talking about, Donald Trump, Ben Carson, Carly Fiorina, trending upwards, and the more established candidates or establishment candidates of the GOP who have held office, sinking into single digits, Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, Scott Walker. Let's listen to Scott Walker here and have you comment on, well, he was for months here in Iowa, Kathy, considered a front runner and something that had the sort of recipe that the GOP was looking for in terms of this mix of conservative and more moderate views. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker spoke with Iowa Public Radio's Clay Masters about his poll numbers slipping some time ago. He compares the latest poll numbers to those in 2007, showing Barack Obama running third in the Democratic field.
These races have ebbs and flows. What I think you see is not just out of the front runner, but out of a couple of the candidates, three in particular, who've never held office, is there's a high sense of protest that people have had it with politicians in Washington. Their Republican voters in particular are upset with the Republican leadership in Washington. They feel like they were promised that Obamacare would be repealed, or at least a bill would be passed to repeal Obamacare and a whole bunch of other promises. And here it is August, and that hasn't happened. And so I think it's a matter of a protest. I think, though, in the end, what makes us viable here in Iowa and across the country is that if people look at our records, They'll realize I came in 2000 after the 2010 election with a lot of the same frustrations. I had to first take on my own party and some of the status quo defenders, even the Republican Party, before I took on the unions and the Democrats. And in the end, I'm not intimidated by anyone, be it in my party or anywhere else.
Okay, so what do you think of Scott Walker's analysis of his lower poll numbers? Speaking a few weeks ago, I believe, at the Iowa State Fair with Iowa Public Radio's Clay Masters. Kathy, is he right when he also calls to mind 2007 and where Barack Obama was?
Well, he's right in the sense that these polls are a snapshot in time. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that somebody who's slipped from first place to tied for third is washing out of the Iowa caucuses. But Scott Walker started off really hot right out of the gate. It caused his campaign to have to get organized perhaps a little faster in Iowa than they really thought they would have to. He had to spend most of the winter and into the spring getting his own legislative session and his budget done. And he didn't spend actually that much time on the ground in Iowa until later this summer. So, you know, his campaign in some ways is, I think, behind in organization to some of the ones who perhaps have been sort of in the middle of the pack in the polls. The other thing is he has sort of been chasing his tail a little bit when it comes to positions on issues. It looks like he's almost trying to out-Trump Trump on immigration, some of these mm-hmm. other issues. And what I hear some voters saying is, you know, he would be better off if he stuck to what really appealed to him in the first place, appealed to voters in the first place, which was his record in Wisconsin, standing up to unions, dealing with the budget in a sort of purple state, and those types of issues that really have been his bread and butter.
How is Scott Walker polling out east, this Midwestern governor, Josh Rogers?
He's not doing terribly well. I mean, the average of recent polls, he's at 6%. Trump's at 28%. And Walker, I agree that with Kathy that when Walker first campaigned up here in early spring, Republican activists were terrifically excited by him, and they like the fact that he has delivered on core conservative issues in Wisconsin. He's it's tough in a big field. He's certainly been hurt by somebody like Trump, and he hasn't been here a lot. I think he's made 30 some odd stops in New Hampshire. He's going to be here for the full Labor Day weekend, riding his Harley around all 10 New Hampshire counties. He tries to play up his blue collar background, but on his last swing through the state, he essentially said, "I need to be more energetic. I need to make my case more aggressively."
Mm-hmm. Let me share some listener input here. We've been asking you, our listeners, on this Politics Wednesday with Kathy Obradovich and Josh Rogers, do you need clear positions on specific policies from your candidate, or would you rather trust him or her to just figure that out on the job somehow? How are you thinking? How are you choosing? And Mark Allen tweeting, I first heard of Ben Carson when two yard signs popped up in Victor, Iowa. I like him better than Trump. But this is interesting. Chelsea tweeting to us, the reason older voters go more on trust than details is that we know no campaign promises are realistic, so we look to character. Kathy, what do you think of that for a bit of listener analysis?
Well, it's a little bit sad, you know, if we are reading these campaign promises or hearing these campaign promises from candidates and knowing that they're just, you know, not worth the paper they're written on. I think part of vetting candidates is questioning them about how realistic their proposals are and how exactly are you going to get this done, knowing that Washington is a mess. I think that people expect candidates to go into Washington with at least some realistic expectation they can get done the things that they say they're going to do.
Right. But if you would boil this down to an interpersonal communication, let's say this is happening in a family or something, that you have one family member who, has for years talked about specifics in terms of behavior and what's going to happen in the family, and other family members know, typically those promises are not kept. you would go to character, wouldn't you? It's interesting, isn't it?
Well, and or you go to non-politicians, which is, I think, what's happening with Donald Trump and Ben Carson. People are fed up with hearing all of these promises and then not seeing them happen when people get to Washington. They're thinking maybe if we send different kinds of people to Washington, that will change.
It's interesting as we talk about the differences between these two lead-off states, New Hampshire and Iowa, early next year. They will be the two first battlegrounds for all of these candidates, these presidential candidates. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie not polling well in national or state polls, I believe, but he is asked to compare the states here, Josh and Kathy. Talking about Iowans, he says, quote, "Iowans are a little more laid back, a little more kind of sitting and keeping their arms folded, saying, let me listen more, let me see. Granite Staters, on the other hand," he says, "are a little more flinty, a little more pushy. They want to ask you something, and they want to do it now. They don't want to wait." Josh Rogers, when you're out covering political campaigns and hearing these candidates speak, do you see that kind of behavior from your fellow Granite Staters?
Well, there's a certain type that I mean, you know, some of this is sucking up to New Hampshire from Chris Christie, who's pretty much pinned his entire hope on winning the election on doing well in New Hampshire. You know, there's some truth to what he says. People can be pointed, but at the same time, this, you know, plays into the way Chris Christie is trying to sell himself to the country and to New Hampshire. His campaign slogan essentially that he's going to tell it like it is. And, you know, there have been candidates who have ridden the sort of truth-telling reputation to victory in New Hampshire, John McCain, obviously. And that's kind of what Chris Christie's been going for to no real effect thus far. He's been – I think he's done more than 80 campaign stops, and he's been sliding. You know, John Kasich is also spending a lot of time in New Hampshire, and he's been going for a slightly similar thing to slightly better effect, at least at this point in the race. He's somebody to watch in New Hampshire, and I know he's not doing terribly well according to the polls in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. And Kathy, very quickly, it's not that a lot of Iowans, of course, at the Des Moines Register soapbox at the fair, people speak up, don't they? They don't sit quietly with arms folded many times.
Well, a lot of those people actually are not from Iowa who come and heckle the candidates. We saw heckling of Scott Walker. Those were union people from Wisconsin. I think the Hog Crate people who jumped on stage with Chris Christie, I don't know for sure, but they may not have been from Iowa. So yeah, it does get a little rough and tumble in politics. But I think that Chris Christie is right in the sense that Iowans do sit back and listen, and they're not necessarily interested in getting in a candidate's face or shouting them down, unless they're really just trying to promote an agenda of their own as opposed to figuring out who they're going to vote for.
Kathy Obradovich is with us. She will stay with us into the second half hour along with Josh Rogers of New Hampshire Public Radio. We want to hear from you. Do you need clear positions on specific policies from your candidate? Or is it more of a matter of trust with him or her to figure out the specific policies later on the job? You want to know whether you can trust that person. 1-866-780-9100. Back in just a moment. And we're back midstream in Iowa Public Radio's River to River. Over the noon hour, I'm Ben Kiefer, and we have Politics Wednesday with Kathy Obradovich, Des Moines Register political columnist, Josh Rogers, senior political reporter for New Hampshire Public Radio, picking apart some of the latest polls as we look at this presidential race. First of the nation test, 5 months away. That would be the Iowa caucuses soon after that in New Hampshire, the primaries there. We want to have you join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to leave your comments or your questions. The first half hour devoted to the GOP side of the equation. I want to ask each of you to weigh in on the Democratic side now. Kathy Obradovich, what is the latest polling showing for Hillary Clinton and the surprisingly strong challenge from Bernie Sanders?
Yeah, we are seeing Bernie Sanders rise in the polls. He is only 7 points behind Hillary Clinton at this point. She was at 37% in our poll. He was at 30%. And I think what we're seeing here is people are starting to know who Bernie Sanders is. He is growing a lot in name recognition. His you know, approval ratings are a little bit lower than Hillary Clinton's, but still, but also his disapproval ratings are lower. And he, I think, is starting to make the case that he is a credible candidate to run against Hillary Clinton. That credibility factor, I think, means a lot to Democrats who want to back somebody who's going to win.
Mm-hmm. Ann Selzer, who conducted this poll for the Des Moines Register, offered this explanation to the Washington Post in the article that I read, also noting that Clinton has lost one-third of her supporters since the May poll. This feels like 2008 all over again. What do you think of that comment, Kathy?
Well, it does, in the sense that Hillary Clinton was the prohibitive front runner going into the campaign in 2008. And she got surprised at the end by a surprisingly popular Barack Obama. She ended up coming in third, a close third, in the caucuses behind Obama and John Edwards. But Hillary Clinton has had that experience already. She is building a serious ground operation in Iowa, and she is, I think, not going to make all the same mistakes that she made in 2008.
Mm-hmm. Okay, over to New Hampshire on the Democratic side. Bernie Sanders in recent polls ahead of Hillary Clinton, Josh?
Yes, four of the last six taken in August, and he surprised a lot of people. He is obviously from a neighboring state, but he's excited liberal activists in the party who want to take the Democratic Party in a more liberal direction. And, you know, Hillary Clinton has deep ties to New Hampshire. Obviously, it was an important state in her own political career in 2008. After coming in third in the caucuses, she, of course, came here and surprised Senator Obama and beat him in Iowa. And, you know, the race continued. It's a big state for Bill Clinton. She has a lot of ties here, a lot of institutional support. Her headquarters are right next to the Democratic Party headquarters. Her campaign has a joint fundraising agreement with the Democrats. This race is tight right now. She has a substantial campaign organization. One of the questions for the Sanders people is, can they build something that can compete with what she has, which has obviously well-funded, but also people who have won many elections here. And she has support from, you know, the top Democrats in the state, from U.S. Senator Jean Shaheen. She has strong ties to Governor Maggie Hassan, who hasn't come out and endorsed her, but did in 2008. And real practiced hands running her operation here.
Mm-hmm. Do you see Bernie Sanders ramping up his ground game in New Hampshire, Josh?
Yes, you know, they've expanded. They've had to move to a larger office. They say they're going to have a much, you know, activist to activist outreach situation. In some ways, to me, the way they talk is reminiscent of another politician from Vermont who was very popular in the summer, Howard Dean. And it's interesting today, actually, the Clinton campaign is trucking in Howard Dean over from Vermont to you know, talk about his support for Hillary Clinton. So, you know, the Clinton people are doing what they can to remind people that you know, Clinton has broad support within the party. But you look at the polls, and a lot of the numbers that give them some pause is whether or not Hillary Clinton is exciting to the base of the party. And there, you know, this business with the emails and her private server, that, you know, you talk to independent voters, you talk to people at events, and a lot of them, you know, say that raises troubling questions, and certainly trust issues are something that Hillary Clinton is used to grappling with.
Kathy, do you think the email controversy that continues to dog the Clinton campaign is really taxing these poll numbers as we see them slip in her column?
Actually not. Our poll asked likely Democratic caucus goers directly, you know, do they think that this email scandal is important? And the majority of them said no. And that wasn't just Clinton supporters. That was also voters who were supporting other candidates. They don't see that as being the big issue. However, I think that the email scandal feeds into an underlying issue that we've seen, not in this particular poll, but other polls dealing with how trustworthy is Hillary Clinton. I also think that Hillary Clinton is the embodiment of the establishment politician. And even though Bernie Sanders has been in Washington for a couple of decades, he seems more like the guy who is attracting the counterculture chic movement of 2016. You know, we might have seen these people, this sort of same sort of energy around Ron Paul in 2012. And now, you know, it's cool to be for Bernie Sanders. It's not necessarily people have not captured the cool over at the Hillary Clinton campaign.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to a caller who dialed 1-866-780-9100, Politics Wednesday with Kathy Obradovich and Josh Rogers. Suzanne is with us from Grinnell, Iowa. Hi, Suzanne.
Oh, hi, yes. I guess I don't hear people talking about the hard issues, and I'm supporting Bernie because of the issues. The XL pipeline is enormously important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And she is in favor of that, and I don't know that Bernie is not, but I would imagine he's not. And she's very hawkish on Iran. That bothers me. She is for the core curriculum. That bothers me. She is, you know, all the way down the line, I don't see her as being very liberal or representing my values, and I do see Bernie representing those values. She talks about equality, but she's for free trade. So I don't see how we're going to bring jobs home when she's for free trade, things like that. So I think people who are frustrated with where the Democratic Party has gone sees Bernie as a tangible solution, and I don't think he's fringe.
Okay. Suzanne, it sounds like you're a Bernie Sanders backer. Do you see him as – how does he rate on your electability scale once he gets into – would possibly get into a general election scenario?
Well, I think –
Do you worry about that?
Yes, I am worried about that, but I see him as a populist. And I think it's been a long time since maybe Wellstone since we've had a potential populist candidate. And I think that people are hungry for a populist who – is willing to talk about the 99%.
All right. Suzanne in Grinnell, thanks for your view. 1-866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. We have to put into the Democratic equation also the talk of Vice President Joe Biden may yet enter the race, throw his hat in the race. Kathy, you've written about this in your political column for the Des Moines Register. What does the Iowa poll reveal about Joe Biden's appeal?
You know, Joe Biden is very popular among Iowa, likely Democratic caucus goers. His popularity is on the same level as Hillary Clinton's. He would come into the poll if you were to decide to run at about 14%. That's good for third place. What's interesting, though, is he is the top second choice for all of the Democratic likely caucus goers who have picked somebody else as a first choice. So that's a good position to be in a caucus where, you know, the second choice sometimes comes into play if the first choice isn't viable in a given precinct caucus. So being a popular second choice means that voters are looking at him as a possible candidate. The fact that he has not announced that he is running, I think, holds down his numbers also. People are more likely to say they support somebody who's actually out there running.
And political insiders like you and Josh would say also, of course, follow the money as the truest signals of whether he's planning to run, setting up some sort of fundraising committee, hiring staff who could work on a campaign. I understand neither of these things has happened. Josh Rogers, the popularity of the vice president out east in New Hampshire?
He's quite popular within the party. The super PAC draft Biden is, rolled out somebody as a state director who supported Joe Biden in the past. There are certainly people who were loyal to Biden. It's fair to say he didn't, he wasn't the incumbent vice president, but his two prior runs for president didn't go terrifically well here. It's a big deal to run for president. Who knows what he's going to do? It would certainly complicate things for Clinton and for Sanders, I think, in New Hampshire, if you were to get into the race. But it's,
do we know whether – I think the Iowa poll, didn't it reveal if he would siphon more from Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders?
Actually, it was about even. If we were to do the race between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders without Joe Biden in the mix, it would be like a 7-point race instead of a 6-point race, something like that. So it is very close. Roughly, Joe Biden's support would come almost equally from Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton.
Excuse the interruption, Josh. You were going on?
No, I think it's just hard to know what's going to happen with this.
Okay.
He's down in Florida. It would be interesting to see. There are a lot of people going to be scrutinizing a speech he's giving today.
Yeah. I hear, too, he'll be on the Colbert Report, which it would be hard to say no to Stephen Colbert. When asked, but of course politicians know how to say no to an answer they don't want to answer. Let's go to Matt in Floyd, Iowa, 1-866-780-9100, coming to the end of our hour, but we want to make sure we hear from Matt. What's on your mind?
I have a history major and a philosophy minor, and I'm just kind of wondering about whether we can be suspect of any attorneys in the race from either side. We have a lot of attorneys in Congress and stuff, and they pile a lot of rules on top of each other. This goes for Chris Christie or for Hillary Clinton. What are your expert opinions on what we can expect from legalism from the presidential candidates?
Okay, so this, if I'm getting your drift, the outsider here, we have a neurosurgeon, we have an entrepreneur, a real estate mogul. Kathy, you want to weigh in on that? Are we tired of people with legalistic backgrounds?
Well, I think that the closest I could get to that possibly was our Senate campaign in 2014.
Yep.
We had Joni Ernst, who was not a lawyer, running against Bruce Braley, a trial attorney. And that did come into the conversation. And there was rhetoric like, we don't need more lawyers in Washington, D.C. I don't think that was the primary reason that she won the race. But there was some of that rhetoric around that campaign.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to mention this before the end of the hour. Jeb Bush, also front runner, has been attached to his name in the past, more than in the present. He seems to be on the offensive against Donald Trump already this week, warring videos, calling out each other's past statements and positions. We've seen yesterday Bush releasing a video titled "The Real Donald Trump," in which Trump's past statements expressing support for Democrats like Hillary Clinton, and Trump shooting back later yesterday, I believe, posting an Instagram video of Bush praising Clinton as well. Do you think, Josh Rogers, that Jeb Bush is taking a good tact here in trying to out-Trump Trump? Will that work? Is that the way to down someone who is so up in the polls?
Well, I think the fact that he's doing it is interesting development. When every candidate that has come through New Hampshire for the past couple of months has been asked about Donald Trump, and I spent a lot of time with the Bush campaign, and 90% of the time, Jeb Bush would say, what can you say about Donald Trump that he hasn't already said himself, and move on, I want to talk about me. This is a suggestion that his campaign feels they need to take Trump down. We'll see how that works out. Bush has referred to himself repeatedly as being the tortoise in this race and taking a slow, steady approach. He obviously has some institutional advantages, some financial advantages that some of the other campaigns don't have that suggests that he could run this race for the long haul. A strong performance in New Hampshire has been seen as essential for him, but duking it out with Trump is certainly new for him.
Mm-hmm. And how is Jeb Bush doing in New Hampshire here? I guess that latest Iowa poll, right, Kathy, sinking into the single digits for Jeb Bush, right?
He is in Iowa, yes.
Mm-hmm. What about in New Hampshire, Josh?
Well, he's second to Trump, but well behind according to these polls, and it is worth stressing that these polls are a slice in time that I remember covering Rick Perry on Labor Day when people in the crowd were saying he reminded them of Ronald Reagan. So, you know, we're a long ways from the end of the road here. But all the candidates are having to grapple with Trump, if only because he's eating up so much of the news coverage as well as the voters' attention. And so as things move to the fall, it'll be interesting to see if this changes. But I don't think going after Trump is a sign of strength. I mean, we've seen the same thing with Rand Paul when he's campaigned up here. He at one time led the polls in New Hampshire. The last swing, he's here today, but on his last trip, he spent all of his time stressing two things, that, you know, Donald Trump shouldn't be trusted, and that one poll showed him within spitting distance of Hillary Clinton in a bunch of early states. And so, you know, going after Trump, if anything, just symbolizes Donald Trump's current strength.
Mm-hmm. One of the best quotes I saw about this, Jeb Bush taking on Donald Trump going on the offensive here, was someone saying, well, when you wrestle a pig, you get dirty, and the pig likes it. Kathy Obradovich, is that a picture that you have in your mind when you see any of the other candidates polling well below Donald Trump, getting in, I guess, the mud pit, as this thing would be, to wrestle with him at his level?
Well, I certainly wouldn't characterize Donald Trump or any of the candidates as pigs.
No,
not at all. But I would say, you know, the Des Moines Register, my newspaper, it took a big poke at Donald Trump earlier this summer, said he ought to drop out of the race. And that was something that Donald Trump relished, I think, and enjoyed having that fight with the media. Mm-hmm. And came out, you know, just as well or better than he went into that. So I do think that Donald Trump thrives on that kind of conflict. I don't know that it necessarily will be great for Jeb Bush to try to fight up against Donald Trump on that level. But Jeb Bush does, I think, need to show his supporters that he is a fighter. And so to that level and showing that he is somebody who's going to get in and mix it up and fight for the nomination will, I think, help him with the people who are predisposed to support Jeb Bush.
Go ahead.
Well, also just whether – I'm just curious to see to the extent to which Donald Trump's track record on policy issues and the way in which his stated positions now or his not stated positions now may be different from – positions he's taken in the past on core Republican issues, be it abortion, be it taxes, be it the Clintons. A traditional politician wouldn't have been able to weather a lot of things Donald Trump's already been through. And these are all things that core Republican voters might be concerned by.
And apparently these core Republican voters are willing to trust him, and they don't have to worry about the details on issues.
As revealed by the latest Iowa.
Yes.
Okay, let's try to squeeze in one more caller before the hour ends. Patricia is joining us from North Liberty. Have to ask you to be brief, Patricia, but please share your thoughts.
No problem. I'm an older, retired Iowan, and in terms of voting, I want both facts, both details, and to know that I can trust someone from their history.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you want to combine both specifics with trust. So we're thinking trust with the heart, if you will, but you want to use your head and make sure that candidate lines up with your positions.
Well, and not only trust from the heart, but trust from a particular candidate's history. What they voted for, what have they accomplished, what have they presented, and have they maintained a steady position.
And does that point you to a specific candidate right now?
You betcha. Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders. And you think you're solid for him, or can you be swayed? You're still looking around?
I will not be swayed until I have to be if he does not win the primary.
Okay. But then you would be in the Hillary Clinton column?
I would have to be.
Okay. Very good, Patricia. Thank you for your thoughts from North Liberty. Thoughts to leave us with Kathy Obradovich as you look forward to the coming weeks?
Well, I would just in response to the caller say,
sure,
absolutely. Trust is not mutually exclusive from wanting to know a candidate's positions. There's a lot of things that you can't predict is going to happen and that the next president will have to deal with. And so that trust factor is really important to voters.
Okay. Josh Rogers?
I'm just interested to see what happens once the summer's over, and that's when voters allegedly start paying attention.
Okay. Right now we have people who are political hardcore political people who and then the rest of the people get on board after their summer vacations, huh?
Well, I mean, that's what they say. But, I mean, this year's defied a lot of, you know, so-called truism. So we'll see how it goes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Josh Rogers, for lending us your expertise from New Hampshire Public Radio, where your senior political reporter, Kathy Obradovich, of the Des Moines Register, political columnist there in our Des Moines studio. Kathy, Josh, thank you for coming in.
Thanks, Ben.
You're welcome.
Tomorrow on the program, we're marking the 70th anniversary of the end of World War II. I'll talk with a couple of World War II veterans about their experience. That's tomorrow on the program. River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. We had help today in Des Moines from Rick Fredrickson. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Podcasting and on-demand audio available by going to iowapublicradio.org. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. Go to our website and leave them. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.